So to our featured guest this morning, for over 50 years, REMAP has been helping disabled people to live more independent lives. And they have over 900 skilled volunteers at work across the country. They design and custom make equipment for each individual because everyone's needs are different. Their network of skilled volunteers responds to thousands of requests for their help every year, and they provide their service free of charge. In this area around Cambridge, there is indeed Cambridge REMAP as part of REMAP across the United Kingdom. And one of the volunteer engineers is with me now. It's Mike Phillips, who's made the journey in to us along the A14 this morning. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Phil.
Thank you very much for coming in. Finding a bit about your background, Mike, I always think, you know, somebody's got to have the skill in their fingers and in their almost in their toes. You've got to have the thing called aptitude. Now, no disrespect for you, because you had a glittering career, a lot of which you probably wouldn't be able to talk about. You're now a retired gentleman, and you didn't actually do any engineering as a trade in your working life.
Nope, I didn't. And when I first learned about REMAP from a friend, I was a bit tentative, really. Worried, if you like, that my skills might not be sufficient to enable me to make a decent contribution to REMAP's work. And to that end, I went and spoke with the then chairman of the Cambridge panel and talked through the sort of things they do. And I came away sufficiently convinced that I was actually going to be able to make a contribution, even though I might have to steer clear of some of the more complicated projects. And that, I guess, is roughly how it's turned out.
As the website says, every volunteer is very valuable to the organisation, and without you as volunteers, there would be no REMAP, not just in Cambridge, but across the country. So therefore, does it mean that you are the sort of chap that has one of those little sheds hunkered away at the back of the garden, maybe that nobody else would fear to tread, that contains all sorts of gadgets? Maybe you've got a pillar drill, a lathe, somewhere where you can work away, or you have an outhouse or part of the garage which has been taken over as your workshop?
I certainly haven't got anything at the bottom of the garden. I think my wife might take a view on that. But I do have what I imagine is fairly typical of REMAP volunteers, which is to say a garage that's an Aladdin's cave of freezers and all sorts of bits and bobs, and my tools. That range of tools is probably typical of an enthusiastic DIYer, if you like. I've got normal equipment, plus a pillar drill, you mentioned, yes, and a radial arm saw, but not a lathe, which is quite a not a problem, but it's limiting. But on the other hand, other people in their garages, sheds, or whatever they choose as a location may have what I lack. So,
yeah, you need space for something like a lathe, certainly, Mike, and also a little bit of money, unless you can find a decent second-hand one. And for those who don't know what a lathe is, it's for turning things, not just wood. You've probably seen, if you've been to a town and country show, where people are using a chisel and taking a spindle of wood and turning it into something like a balustrade or very, elegant. But for you, you would probably be turning something of metal. You brought something for us to have a look at in a little while. We'll describe it to listeners. And to say more about what REMAP does, Pippa Cousins has been a guest of Neil Whiteside on this radio station as well, as we cover and feature you across this month at Cambridge REMAP. Pippa saw me last November, came in and was interviewed, and she had a aluminium slab that had been machined out. I think somebody had used a milling machine to do this. It's very intricate, and I know that actually Cambridge REMAP's very proud of this, Mike, because you bring it along to presentations. The idea is you have little needles, and then you can lay into a bed, if you like, which is the aluminium, a reader with an app on it. So it could be a tablet, maybe an iPad, maybe an Android device. The person that wants to use this doesn't have proper use of their digits and their fingers. They find it very painful, so they can't press the buttons on the iPad, but they like to use an e-reader app on the iPad. So what you guys came, and girls, came up with was this ingenious foot pedal device with some bicycle brake cables, I believe, that you use, some little needles to act as fingers, and they point and press and depress the buttons so that you can move forward or back on the pages on an e-reader app, which I saw as absolutely ingenious, Mike. Over to you now. Where does your ingenuity lie? Do you meet the client first off before you start coming up with the ideas?
Yes, we do. Typically, with the occupational therapist who may have referred that client to us, we may do a joint visit in the first instance.
You go to them.
Yes.
You meet them.
Yeah.
And I guess that's really special because you go to the environment that they're in. So if it's a kitchen environment and they want to self-cater for themselves, you can see the problems that they might have, for instance, with their hands being able to chop vegetables. That's all.
Yes. I can't really imagine that we could even begin to do our work, undertake any project, if we didn't go to visit the client in their home or wherever they are to understand properly the problem. We know beforehand roughly what the problem is, what the difficulty is that they're having, but I often find, and I'm sure my colleagues do as well, that only when you get there do you fully understand the nature of that problem, which sometimes turns out to be rather different to what's described on paper.
And so you go away on paper, maybe, or maybe you've got some good skills with computer-aided design, and you go home and you come up with some sketches. It's quite important, I suppose, that you network with other people, like-minded souls who got some engineering experience than Mike, that you could say, well, get on the phone to them or you send them a picture. I wonder how we could do that.
Yes, there are two ways in which we network, to use your words. First of all, the REMAP website has an archive of projects that have been undertaken over many, many years, and that's designed to save people reinventing the wheel. So that can be a port of call to discover how best to solve a particular problem if it's been encountered before. Perhaps more frequently, though, the networking is very much an in-house affair. As Pippa will have told you, we meet once a month, we being the 10, 16 volunteers, however many we've got at the moment, and we discuss the various projects we've got in train at that particular time, and especially the new ones. And I, for one, will often have a problem but not a solution. And it's amazing how, in the space of perhaps 5 minutes, chatting around the table, people saying, what about so-and-so, or might you approach it this way, that you come up mutually with a solution to the problem and move on from there. Whereas if you simply sat in isolation at home, scratching your head, you'd probably never get there.
Indeed, you get like-minded people that come up with an ideas, whether it's something mechanical, electromechanical, or maybe electronic. I guess most of the things you do tend to be mechanical.
Yes, I think so. I haven't analysed it, but I would think the majority are, yes. And most of the volunteers, the engineers, as they do tend to be called, wrongly in my case, have a mechanical engineering background rather than an electrical one. But certainly we've got people who understand wiggly amps. And
wiggly amps.
Yes, and can solve problems that have an electrical slant to them.
But we were talking earlier, not reinventing the wheel, but there are many of the devices that you make for people to help them along include those with wheels for mobility, to get someone just out maybe enjoying the park, somebody who might have lost a limb or part of a hand, so they have an elbow maybe, but it'll leave them some support with a sort of a tripod-based support with some wheels on it, so and also can give them the confidence maybe to walk again, to give them support. So you work on those ergonomics. You have an idea of the dimension of the person, so you know what height you've got to build something, and put that all together then, Mike. But, how long have you been doing this?
I find these days that when I say, 3 or 4 years, it always turns out to be 7 or 8. I think it's probably 6 or 7, something like that.
And the idea, I presume, that the most enjoyable bit is when you can unite the person, and presumably it's sometimes it's cut and come again, so it's trial and tribulation. I presume some of the objects that you do make, some of the appliances, shall we call them, sometimes don't work out first time, so you go back and you do a version 1.1 because version 1.0 didn't work properly. That must have happened a few times.
Definitely. Nobody gets it right first time, every time. I'm trying to think of an example. Yes, the guy that made that reader device that you were describing to your listeners earlier, the one with the little pins that pressed forward and back on the Kindle, also made an even a much more complicated, he was a terrific engineer, much more complicated device which was designed to enable disabled youngsters to take part in archery. And this took many months, was quite expensive by our standards, and it was very complicated. And he actually left our Cambridge panel, but we were left with the device, which was, as I say, absolutely tremendous, but it wasn't wholly reliable. So that was an example of something that we had to revisit. And going back to your networking question earlier, what we did in that instance was we worked with the university's engineering department, and the very substantial piece of equipment that he had made originally was given to the students, to the undergraduates, as a project. We described to them the problems, showed them the things that tended to be slightly unreliable, and basically said, here's your project, see if you can improve matters, which they did, and we haven't heard lately from the people who now own that item of equipment, so we can assume that they succeeded.
But you do meet people, Mike, after you've united them with something you've made for them, and that must be the point at which you get most satisfaction.
Yes, and of the people in question, for me certainly, and I would imagine others, the greatest satisfaction comes from children who have disabilities. Clearly a lot of our clients are quite elderly, and they expect, perhaps we all do, to become less adept, physically adept, as our lives proceed. With children, they're at the outset, the start of their lives.
They're climbing that hill, if you like, towards pushing out and making their envelope and the mobility envelope larger all the time,
yeah.
Of course.
If you want an example, I had a little girl in Camborne who had really only one hand. She'd been born with only one workable hand. She, like any young girl, wanted to ride a bike, and it doesn't take much imagination to know that riding a bike with only one effective hand is not the simplest of things. I made a very basic device for her, which was really a block of wood with a clamp on it that went onto the handlebar. My wife found a mitten in one of the drawers from our children. We put Velcro on the block and on the mitten, and she was able to ride the bike. And I vividly recall the first day that she did ride the bike with this device, and she turned round and looked at me with the biggest smile on her face that I've seen for a long time. And that is clearly very rewarding. I should add that she immediately then fell off the bike, which might sound unfortunate, but I was conscious that I needed to make something to which she would not remain attached if she were to fall off. So that was a test run, and thankfully she did separate from her handlebar. But anyway, big smile, very rewarding.
Indeed. Now, you've got with you today, you did bring in something, Mike. I often say to my guests, you know, if we have the Cambridge Science Centre in, bring some props. In this case, it's not really a prop, I suppose. I don't know whether it's a prototype or not. In front of Mike is a oblong box, so it's rectangular. It's got some depth to it. It's actually got some nails through the back, but I think that's probably to grip something. Mike has taken a piece of plywood out. The plywood has got some domino-sized, very much so, actually. When I think of them like the dominoes, the game you would place, pieces of plywood as well, which have been glued to the wood, and I've been trying to work out what it is. It's not got any holes in the side, so it isn't something to trap a rodent. But the first thing I thought was perhaps you could put a little mouse in there and it'd go round and round, poor little thing, until you let it free somewhere else. Mike, you're going to have to... I'm scratching my head at this stage. You're going to have to tell me what you've got there.
You're scratching your head. My goodness. Can we switch to television, do you think? I don't know how on earth you'd describe this to your listeners and in an intelligible way. I'll do my best. There's a school in St. Neots, the Samuel Pepys School, that has, I think, is exclusively for children with disabilities. And they rely quite heavily on tablets, iPads, if you like, except they're not iPads. They are made by a firm, I think, called Asus. And predictably and inevitably, the children who rely on these tablets tend to drop them. And they asked us if we could make something in the way of a protective case for the tablets so that when they were dropped, they weren't damaged. And what you see here, the two items, well, first of all, I made a mock-up of the tablet out of wood, which I thought was going to be totally straightforward, but then realised that the eventual protective case had to have holes for the on-off switch, holes for the speakers and so on, which is what these lumps are that are...
So these are the kind of domino... They look like little dominoes stuck on the thing, for want of a better...
They
or
do.
Or a Bassett's all sorts, licorice, you know, the little sandwich tarts that have got the little licorice inside them. Looks a bit like some couple of those stuck on there as well.
Well, the idea was that this whole assembly goes into the box.
Down it goes.
And you then pour a silicon liquid around the whole thing up to the surface, leave it for 24 hours, and then take it out.
Very clever.
And you're left.
So this is a mould, and you can mass produce.
That's the mould.
Mike's showing me a photograph of the finished end product with all the various cutouts needed for various buttons and for the loudspeaker.
Yeah, and I made three of these, and the nicest moment was when I handed over the first to a little girl who was going to use it, and she said, "It's a lovely pink."
I did it in some colours as well, Mike.
Couldn't care less about the structure, as long as it was the right colour.
Wow. It's fantastic that you do this along with your other quite small team in Cambridge Remap. You want to find out more about Cambridge Remap? Well, tune to Cambridge 105 Radio across the next few weeks. Put into your search engine, just put in Cambridge Remap and you can go to the website. There's a contact form there where you, if you've got some time and you've got a modicum of skill, can go to that website and you can... volunteer as Mike does. There's a lot of camaraderie there. They get to meet once a month, swap ideas, come up with the next ideas for the next challenge for the next disabled person and some of the equipment that they custom made for them. Mike Phillips, thank you very much for coming in as a volunteer engineer for
Remap. Not at all. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Thank you.